The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Before any of it, we're going to kick things off with our afternoon update. Ian O'Doherty is with me, columnist at the Irish Independent, and Jen Hogan, columnist with the Irish Times. You're both very, very welcome. Simon Harris, effectively, the new Taoiseach, Jen.
Yeah, well, it doesn't look like anyone else wants the job.
No, a coronation rather than the competition.
Yeah, a little bit like
stop
that.
Stealing my lines.
You're not
supposed to give the heads up to people. No, it doesn't. It's interesting, isn't it, to see that nobody seems to be keen. Like, yeah, it's effectively done. Going to be the youngest Taoiseach, or if he as expected becomes Taoiseach. But yeah, I mean, it was funny when after the shock of Leo announcing it, I was chatting to one of my colleagues, and he was the person I thought, okay, it'll be Simon Harris. He's just that person who would get it. And then I was arguing with another colleague today, in friendly terms, obviously, and we were chatting about why Simon Harris, and what that would do for Fine Gael, and how it would look for them going into maybe general elections next year. And there was such mixed opinions on it. Like, was this, the two of us had different perspectives on it. But why Simon Harris, like in terms of for the public perception, in terms of looking at that, I think he still has a bit of the golden glow from the pandemic. I think that was quite redemptive for him, you know, a bit like Leo had at the beginning, where everybody was looking towards the two of them to...
Do you think?
I do. And I think for anyone who's kind of working in media, or anybody who's working looking at that the whole time, you're remembering other parts of his time in politics. But I think that that's left over a lot. And I think people feel that Simon Harris is accessible. I think that's another thing. And I think the party be aware of that. He's that accessible character, largely because of his social media presence even. I mean, he used to check in the evening times during the pandemic. All these things, they all work in terms of endearing you to people. They do. They definitely do. Feeling.
Holly Willoughby. First, are you okay?
I know. It didn't. Yes, it could have backfired. But every evening there used to be, you know, you'd be scrolling through Instagram, losing the will to live and not able to get out of your 2K or your 5K.
Leo Varadkar said about Holly Willoughby that she's a good politician for the social media age. Holly Willoughby. Oh my God, I'm sorry. Holly Cairns. But she's good for the social media age. In other words, she appeals to idiots. And who just like the kind of bland platitudes. And I think Simon probably falls into that category. He's very smart, but if he goes for this, which really now looks like
it's a lock.
I think it's a really dumb move.
Really?
Yeah, because we all know what's going to happen at the local elections, right? And we all pretty much have a good idea, a good barometer of how it's going to go at the general elections. Mm-hmm. And the people are angry. And the parallels between Fine Gael at the moment and the Tories at the moment are quite remarkable. The two parties are in power for too long. People want to change. Mm-hmm. It's why Sinn Féin were very clever and just keep on going, change. The more seasoned heads, the Pascals and people like that, unless he goes off to the IMF or whatever, if I was one of those people, I would let Simon Harris go for it. Let him take the splatter. Let him take the electoral disasters. And then maybe come in 18 months' time. It's a bit like what Kemi Badenoch is doing with the Tories, is that people are trying to push her forward in the butch against Rishi Sunak. And she said, no, absolutely not. So maybe they're talking now about Penny Mordaunt. But they're going to get such a bloody nose. I mean, they're going to need a blood transfusion. And I do think, and I'm not saying this as, and I was writing about this in The Spectator in England today, and I was saying that the savvy heads will sit this one out because it doesn't matter who they are.
Yeah.
The party is due a kicking. And familiarity breeds contempt.
I remember the same argument being made about Micheál Martin taking over at Fianna Fáil before the 2011 general election. And he's still the leader of the party.
Yeah, but
it's a completely different
landscape.
But the opportunity might not come along again. And Simon Harris, in all likelihood, they do get a kicking. But that's no guarantee he loses his job anytime soon. He goes out in the rubber chicken circuit. He builds back up the party. They spent 5 years in opposition. Then maybe they find themselves back in government. Suddenly it's 15, 20 years down the line. and you're thinking, well, maybe not 20. It could be 15 years down the line for a Pascal Dunne, and you think, I should have gone for it when I had the chance.
Well, that's a four-election cycle. It's a long time. But there is that thing, that, and particularly something that motivates a lot of politicians and stuff, is seize the day. And it's better to regret doing something than to regret sitting back. Because, as you said, you know, it's politics, dear boy. And events can basically just change everything. As we've seen in a perfect encapsulation of that, as we've seen this week, events can completely change everything. And one of the things that really surprised me about Farage's announcement was that normally it's very hard to keep a secret in Irish politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the reasons for that is that we're a small country and a lot of the media, a lot of the poll corps and other hacks as well, they don't just know some of the politicians, they socialise with them. You know, I mean, I've gone for pints with Fine Gael TDs and some of the stuff you'd hear, you know, make your hair curl. And they can be very indiscreet. And we have this lovely informal kind of relationship. So you normally hear the whisper stream will say something is up.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's
none of that.
And there was none. Like, it was kept with an absolutely Stalinist kind of secrecy. But my theory, and there's been a lot of really obnoxious conspiracy theories and stuff. It's a bit like, you know, Leo has become our Kate Middleton of people going, like, why is he doing this? And, you know, what's really behind it? I just think the referendum was the last straw, the two referendum results. I think he got his week in the States. He's always looked very comfortable being the international statesman, which is completely understandable. Who wouldn't want to be in the White House? Who wouldn't want, you know, the eyes of the world upon him? But he's been, as Fionn Sheen aptly put it in the Indo, over the last while, it just looked like he's lost his mojo. And there's the human element. People sneer at politicians so much, but it's an incredibly tough gig. And we don't give them credit enough for that. Regardless of what their political positions are, we don't respect them enough for that. And again, I mean, Leo's off to Fracker, or off to Brussels this morning. Because the
train keeps moving.
The train keeps moving, and he's still young. As he said today, his husband Matt didn't really like the lifestyle, and rather than any sort of nebulous or sort of ulterior motives, I'd say he just hit the end of the road.
Yeah, I mentioned Micheál Martin, and I guess the challenge he had as well, Jen, for the first few years was kind of trying to escape the kind of the taint of the crash. Simon Harris would have that too. Once we move beyond kind of poring over the causes, his time as Minister for Health, and as you said, there'd be discussion about COVID, there'd be discussion about those free smear tests for every woman in the country at the exact same time that led to massive backlogs. There'd be discussion about the Children's Hospital, about promises that children wouldn't wait more than 6 months for spinal surgery, all of those things. But as well, I mean, the taint of housing, the sin of housing, I mean, that it's hard for him to escape that as well. He's sat around the cabinet table now for an awful long time, not as Minister for Housing. Yep. He didn't have direct responsibility, but there's such thing as collective responsibility.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with Ian. It's impossible to see how it could be anything other than hammering in the general election and the local and European elections. But I think for now, there's a bit of that seize the day thing, and there's an opportunity to be Taoiseach. How often does that come up? But he will, absolutely. I mean, the public haven't forgotten the housing crisis that we're living in. I thought something, and you know, it was said in a joke, but Dustin the Turkey put out his own tweet today. He was talking about, you know, we should acknowledge the things that Leo has achieved. For one, he's a 45-year-old man who owns his own home, and it was all ha ha ha. But like that, the reality for people when they're living with their parents and they can't find, they can't get accommodation, and they can't find somewhere to rent, they can't find somewhere to buy, and that frustration and the housing crisis going nowhere in Townsend, Mount Street, and all the huge problems that are coming with the lack of housing, that's going nowhere. That is going nowhere. And and even Simon Harris can't talk his way out of that on social media.
I think as well that the it's not just the electorate, but the people in this country at the moment, they're kind of scared about where we're going, but particularly with the housing crisis and stuff like that. And scared people become angry. And angry people cast protest votes. And so I do think Harris will be putting himself into a very invidious position when he goes into this. Now, it's a political gamble, but, I mean, you don't go into politics if you're not prepared to take a gamble and take a risk. So, I mean, I admire anybody who puts themselves forward. Mm. I just think, if it was me, and from some of the things I've heard from people who know some of the other candidates, they're kind of happy to go,
"You take this one.
I'm going to sit this
one out. Horse, have at it."
Yeah.
I my favourite tweet of all yesterday, and I can't, so apologies to whoever sent it, was every young voter in the country will remember where they were when Leo Varadkar resigned, because it was either their mother's spare bedroom or Australia. Which I think summed up the problems facing the government. Anyway, listen, Simon Harris, all but guaranteed to be the next Taoiseach. We're going to come back to that, as you'd imagine, kind of throughout the show. There was another story. Now, a man has been charged with arson for a fire at a Ringsend pub. Obviously, we can't really talk in any great detail about that particular incident, court case looming. But I would imagine, Jen, there's kind of much relief in government circles that something has happened here, because this was the criticism that they were exposed to for months now, was that this was happening up and down the country. And people were doing it because they felt they could get away with it.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people, I think even the general public, everybody will breathe a sigh of relief. Anybody who was against, which is most people, will be against anything like that, just to see action happen, that it isn't just words, that we're actually seeing some sort of action happening now. And the fact that when misinformation and disinformation takes hold and we end up with places being burnt down, that they will come down heavy and they will pursue it, and now we have a man charged.
It was one of the features of that story over Patrick's weekend that caught my attention as well, of the migrant camp and the migrants moved, the asylum seekers moved from Mount Street down to below Saggart and then they came back. The reason that they were camping outdoors on that site below Saggart is because the building that they might have been in had actually been burnt down, because previously it had been suggested migrants might end up living there. They still ended up living there.
Still.
So the burning down of the building, the only consequence it had was that it made these people sleep outdoors in tents.
Yeah, although it was a homeless hub. It was to be a homeless hub. It was burnt down.
Yeah.
Originally.
Because of migrants.
The moving the people from Mount Street, it really reminded me of something that happened not so long ago in San Francisco, when the Chinese Premier Xi did a visit to America, and he was visiting San Francisco, and Gavin Newsom, the California, cleared out, and San Francisco's just become a tent city now. It's like a lot of the major democratic cities in America, it's a wreck. And he cleared them out so the Chinese media would see a very clean San Francisco, the kind of thing that they expected. And when that was put to him, he went, "Yeah, of course I did." And it was so different to the Irish kind of attitude. Look, I think there's two things to be disentangled. It's a very knotty shoelace, this, when it comes to the immigration debate. And it's erupted so much because we've refused to have a proper debate about this for so long. And now it's become unignorable. There's a lot of communities who don't want their hotels being given up. There's a lot of people who are simply, who feel that they're at the bottom, you know, Irish people who feel they're at the bottom of the ladder, and they're perfectly entitled to feel like that. I think we can all agree that burning buildings down is not a good thing. But what I would say is that to smear anybody who wants to limit immigration and wants to control immigration, but to smear them as far right and to smear them as fascists and Nazis and stuff like that, this is exactly the problem. This is why you do give these idiots who are extremists, you give them the ground that they can clamber up by telling people who are cheesed off and who feel disenfranchised and disillusioned, and you create a vacuum where there's no debate at all about this, and that's when the extremists step in. And that doesn't just happen in Ireland, that's happening all across Europe, and you can see it with the rise of so-called far-right parties in Europe, which actually aren't necessarily far-right. They're just traditional conservatives who want to have a greater control on their borders. So anybody... Now, obviously, we're not talking about the case, right, of arson or anything that's before the courts. We're not talking about it. But if you smear a large proportion of this population, who are the ones who have, whether it's working-class urban communities or whether it's working-class rural communities, if you smear all of them as far-right, because it's an easy thing to do when you live in Sandymount or you live in Donnybrook or you live in, you know, the nice areas, if you smear all of them as far-right, well, then you're creating a monster. Because
no, but the there are far right elements at those protests, and this is the difficulty. It's when you call them out, then that's what you're accused of. You're smearing all of us as being far right. And my point is, I'm absolutely not doing that. But there are people in amongst you who are travelling around the country. They've got nothing to do with Ross Gray or Athenry or Ballyhadrine or anywhere else, and they are just agitating. Yeah. And they are trying to take your well-founded anger on all of the issues that we've talked about and continue to talk about in this show, and they are directing it at asylum seekers to suit their own ends. And you're not labelling everybody as far right when you do that.
They are. I mean, come on. I mean, there's a general cosy consensus within the sort of middle class. Liberal, so-called progressive Irish media, that anybody who has an issue with this is for, and you see it. I see it in my paper. I see it in social media. I see it in Jen's paper. It's a very lazy and very easy way
It's not as simple as that. It isn't as simple as that. And I am telling you, I'm speaking to parents all the day, and I'm speaking. I've actually spoken to kids as well, even about teenagers. There are people out there who are having to deal with the fallout of this festering, bubbling of racism that's happening under beneath scenes that's being facilitated by those who just ask questions. They're just asking questions. And those people that are going around and getting involved in those protests, who have an agenda, who have an absolute agenda.
Nobody's denying that. But look at how electorally irrelevant the far right is, those little parties that come up, and people laugh at them.
But they're pretty relevant when they're encouraging or when they're facilitating, and they're nearly making it okay to be a little bit racist. And the kids and the teenagers and the parents. And I had a child, a teenager, say that they were actually scared. Like, this is a child who's lived here, going to school here, who is scared because of what's happening. So it's affecting communities. But it's affecting people.
No, of course,
we should have discussions. I don't know. You know, people should be able to. It was the same during COVID. It was even the same, and I nailed my flask or my flask my flag to the mast even around vaccination and stuff. But I did feel around the time when children were being vaccinated that we should have facilitated a conversation there, but that was shut down.
But I remember being involved tangentially with Residents Against Racism back in the day when they started, right? And I completely supported them until they became quite far left, to be perfectly frank with you. But I mean, racism is, of course. But one of the things that I found was particularly smug, there was one article, and I'm not even going to mention the paper that it was in. It was people were saying there was a hotel that had been taking bookings for weddings, and they'd had to change it because of, you know, they're bringing in asylum seekers. And the question that was asked, well, do you think your wedding is more important than an asylum seeker's safety? And if I had saved up for a year, I would have gone, yeah, actually, I do. Because everybody immediately backed off. Because they didn't want to be seen to be mean. They didn't want to be seen to be racist. We can, you can never solve any issue, but we can actually have a proper, meaningful debate about this when people are actually honest. It's not a case of progressives are the side of the good and anybody who has an issue is just either some thick troglodyte or they're a neo-Nazi. And I just find it's become so binary. There's no subtlety. There's no nuance. And I blame social media.
It's kind of remarkable it's become so binary and it's so divisive when 99.9% of people agree with having border controls and it's just a question of degree and how it's managed. You know what, actually? Like, ultimately.
Well, there's the subtlety and the nuance.
Most people are somewhere in the middle on every issue. That's the thing.
Exactly.
We as a society are tend to be very polarised.
But like anybody who breaks the law, this thing, the far right has become the boogeyman. And trust me, I know some of the people who are involved in the far right, and they're not impressive people, right?
No.
The debate or the riots in November.
Yeah.
That was blaming the far right. I was speaking to journalists and two cops who were there, right? The main ringleaders were both involved with the Hutch and Kinahan crew, right? They're the local hoods. They're the local gangsters. They weren't looting Foot Locker. To make their fascist tendencies clear. And it was immediately...
Happened there was an interesting narrative because what happened was it was actually kind of elements of the far right were blamed for kind of getting the ball rolling to a degree because they turned up with kind of very, very quickly after the incident with kind of Ireland is full banners at the location where it happened. And then you had the kind of the riot afterwards and it all kind of got rolled into one and it became a far right riot.
Used to wedge through the hate speech bill by Leo Varadkar and Helen McEntee.
That is a discussion for another day. We are out of time. I'm not trying to shut down the discussion because I'm a member of the cosy liberal elite media.
Oh, I know, Kieran.
Have you got a favourite poem or poet?
Dorothy Parker and Siegfried Sassoon. And I just very quickly say that the Irish attitude towards poetry. Peter Barkworth, the actor, did a one-man play about Siegfried Sassoon.
Oh, yeah?
The war poet. And when I was 15, I was obsessed.
Suicide in the Trenches, wasn't that? That was on my junior cert.
No, it wasn't Suicide.
That was on my junior cert.
So this very esteemed English actor came over to do a one-man show in the Gate.
Simple Joy.
And it was on my inter cert as well, actually. And Under Men in Gate and things like that. And I went on my own at 15 into the Gate to see this play. And I was slagged off even by my own teachers. So we're talking about trying to promote poetry in this country. But Siegfried Sassoon and Dorothy Parker, yeah.
I love Jan Burton, who is a modern poet. I don't know if you know her. She's a new book out, Everybody is a Poem. She wrote What Day Is It? It was all over the Irish Times. Who gives a F word at one stage during the pandemic. She swears in her poetry as an avid swearer. It speaks to me, but she just.
Oh, I thought you'd go with Philip Larkin then in that regard.
I would have said John Cooper Clarke.
Yeah,
actually, because John Cooper Clarke is brilliant.
We're already getting in enough text about race without bringing up Philip Larkin. Anyway, Jen Hogan, Ian O'Doherty, thank you both very much for joining me.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.